Hi, everyone. My name is Ida. I am a compulsive overeater. I'm always happy to be speaking at the 100-pounder meeting. I spoke on another night not that long ago, more than a month, but you know, maybe 2 or 3 months ago. And I usually don't try to speak at a meeting. Well, it used to be like once a year, but things change. But when the speaker getter offered me April 16th, I took it, because April 16th is a very special day in my life. 49 years ago today, I hit bottom and I called Overeaters Anonymous. And I know that that was my bottom because I've been abstaining ever since. And so tomorrow I will celebrate 49 years of continuous abstinence from compulsive overeating. And it has been quite a journey. I went from being a 29-year-old morbidly obese woman living alone in an apartment that was a mess because nobody ever came, and so it didn't matter what it looked like, to being a 78-year-old woman who lives in a, I live in a beautiful house next to the ocean, and I had a very successful and very happy 37-year marriage to a man until he died 8 years ago. I cannot fit 49 years into 20 minutes. It's just not possible. But I can tell you that my top weight, since this is a 100-pounder meeting, was 240. That was when I was a teenager, and from that top to the weight when I came into OA was I was 225, and my lowest weight as an adult was 150. And but I spent a lot of that time, you know, hovering around 200. And I know that, you know, 240 is not that dramatic when it comes to a compulsive overeater, but or to a 100-pounder, but I am so glad that that's all I had to deal with. I gave up the food immediately, and I started losing my weight immediately, and I lost 80 pounds my first 10 months in OA. And I take that back. I lost 80 pounds in 8 months. I lost 10 pounds a month for 8 months. Because I went from horrendous binging to a very strict, very low-calorie food plan that worked for weight loss, but not much else. But luckily, about 5 months into the program, I got a sponsor, and I started my my full recovery. I came into OA not to lose weight, because I knew that I was. I knew that I was going to lose weight, but I also knew that it was not going to matter at all unless I changed the way I was living. So I truly came in for the sanity and not the vanity. And since I've been in OA, I have developed a good amount of vanity. And I kind of revel in it, actually. I have been thin for over 48 years, and I've been, the way I put it is that I've been passing for normal. You know, there's nothing about me that, well, when I'm wearing clothes, there's nothing about me that says I was ever a 100-pounder, but oh my God, my skin, it's pretty dramatic. I dress well, and I don't have to dress to look thin, excuse me, because I am thin. And my first sponsor told me, you know, you don't get to you get to lose it all, is what she said. You don't, you're not going to stay pleasingly plump or anything. You get to lose it all. And I have lost it all. I have no way to lose. And that is a miracle. And why do I, you know, why am I like this? It's because my history has shown that when the doo-doo hits the fan, I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to keep my program. And this week has been an active week, program-wise. I wrote inventory, and I made an amends that needed to be made about 40 years ago that was driving me a little bit crazy. And I meditate on a daily basis. And in my meditation, it became very clear to me that I needed to make this amends, no matter how small the event that I was apologizing for was. I needed to do it because I couldn't get it off my mind. So after I finished my sit, I texted this person and I apologized. And I asked her forgiveness. Now, when I was making my amends, and there was only the big book to use, I didn't ask for forgiveness. I told people I was sorry, but I didn't ask for forgiveness. But in the OA 12 and 12 in step 8, it talks a lot about forgiveness in step 8. And so I actually used the word forgive, and it took a great deal of humility for me to do that. But I did it, and I got a text back from the woman, and she says, "Ida, I don't remember any of this." And I had to laugh. She didn't. She said, "I don't remember. Are you sure this was meant for me?" And she actually put her name down to make sure that I had sent the text to the right person. And she said, "But if it was meant for me, I forgive you!" Exclamation point. And she said, "And please forgive me for all of my mistakes." And it was over with. And I wrote back to her, "Yes, it was you. And I'm glad you don't remember." But it was, you know, 40 years ago. And it was, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, I didn't beat her up or steal from her or anything. But I just needed to clean that little thing up. And then I could go on. And So yes, I mean, inventory and amends in 1 week, that's, you know, written inventory and amends in 1 week, that's a pretty active week for me, because I've never been a daily writer. The only thing I do on a daily basis is I abstain from compulsive overeating, I exercise every day, and I meditate every day. Otherwise, everything else is up for grabs. I do not take a daily 10th step, and I never have, because a written step, 10th step, I should say, because I can't wait until night to do it, because I know immediately when I need to do something, because I can feel it in my body. I know when I have gone off the path or done something wrong, I can feel it in my body. And it requires immediate action. So lately, what I have been thinking about a lot is a sense of humor. And I came into program with none. And I can tell you a story that illustrates this. I was in college, and I was doing student teaching. And my student teacher supervisor said to me, "Ida, you obviously know what you're doing, but you don't look like you're enjoying it." And that was one of the most profound things, one of the most important things I've ever had said to me. See, I was too afraid to smile. I was too afraid to show a sense of humor. I was afraid of the children. I was afraid of being not taken seriously or not obeyed if I wasn't constantly stern and on guard. And so when she said that, it just really hit me where I lived. And I don't know how long it took, but I began to relax in front of the children. I began to be willing to show who I was in front of the children and have fun with them and not think they were going to think less of me because I had a smile on my face. And then I realized that a sense of humor, and by sense of humor, I don't mean being funny. I was funny when I was sad. I could be very funny, but I had no sense of humor. I took myself and the world incredibly seriously. And it takes humility to have a sense of humor. I have to be willing to laugh at myself and self as another human being and not feel that I have to be perfect all the time. And I have stories about, you know, that taught me humility. Once I got a phone call from a newcomer, and she got my number off of my interview group newsletter. And she called me, and she was talking to me about a specific subject that she needed to talk about with me. And then at the end, she said, you know, I didn't want to call you, she said, but my sponsor made me call you. But you're nice. And I think about it now, and I have to laugh. You know, oh, what did she think I was going to do, bite her head off or whatever? No, she says, you're nice. And I go, well, thank you. And I didn't, and so I can look at myself and smile and know that she wasn't being hurtful. She didn't mean to, you know, it wasn't a backhanded comment, a compliment or whatever. She was just surprised. And I really did appreciate the call and the courage it took for her to call me, even though she was afraid of me. And then a sense of humor also sometimes doesn't show up for me until I'm looking at the situation in a rear view mirror. When I'm in something, I may not see the humor in it at all. But looking back in retrospect, I can laugh at the situation and I can laugh at myself. And I'm going to be running out of time pretty soon. You know, I want to tell you another story. Now, my husband died of cancer, but he had severe dementia for the last 4 years of his life, and so I had to take him with me wherever I went. And I took him to the grocery store one day, and I was buying a Thanksgiving turkey, and I couldn't find the size I wanted, and I put one in the cart, and then I looked over, and there was another freezer and had the size that I wanted. So I told my husband, John, to put the turkey back in the freezer. And I turned around to get the other turkey that I wanted. And when I turned back around, my husband was gone. And I went up and down the aisles, and I couldn't find him, and I began to panic because I had no idea where he went. I didn't know if he had left the store or, you know, what, and I couldn't find him anywhere. Finally, I saw him clear across the store, and I went over and I got him, and I said, John, what did you do with the turkey? And he said, well, I couldn't find the freezer. And I said, you couldn't find the freezer. Now, we were standing right in front of the freezer, and he said, I couldn't find it. And I said, okay, John, take me to where you put the turkey. And he took me over to the produce section. He had stored the turkey with the pineapples. And I just, I kind of wanted to cry. But I said to him, John, you put the turkey in the pineapples. And I said, but it's not there anymore. And he said,
gentle reminder.
Well, somebody wanted it. Oh, thank you. And he said somebody wanted it, and I just had to laugh. It was either laugh or cry. I had to have a sense of humor, and I saw that, you know, in spite of his dementia, my husband was still in there somewhere. And somebody might be wondering, well, what does that have to do with recovery? I'm telling you, it has everything to do with recovery. The fact that I've lived through, you know, living with someone with dementia and took it incredibly seriously. I'm seeing nothing funny about it. I never make a joke about dementia. But you know what, people? If we don't look at our life situation sometimes with a sense of humor, we will break. We will crack. We will return to the disease. And we will be miserable. We need to see humor wherever it is. And I can tell you another time. In 2022, I was diagnosed with severe heart failure after years of behaving myself. One of the first thoughts in my head was, oh, I'm not going to get to celebrate 50 years of abstinence. Now, my doctor has told me I'm going to die, and I'm thinking, I need to live long enough to celebrate 50 years. Well, I've lived long enough now to celebrate 49. I've lived almost 2.5 years past my expiration date. And I can even look at the death sentence that my doctor gave me. I can look at it and smile and say, well, that didn't happen. And I can have a sense of humor about the way I reacted to it. My husband used to say that I could make him, that I could see the good in about anything, and I could always make him laugh. And that I just cannot emphasize enough how crucial it is for us to lighten up, to find humor, especially about ourselves. I say that I am an endless source of entertainment, and I just wanted to pass that thought on to you. So, and I can't think of any better way to celebrate my hitting bottom than by sharing this at a meeting. My phone number is area code 310-347-1505. Text or call. And I just want to thank all of you for being here, and I want to thank all of the people who have been with me for these years and have supported me through really happy times and through really, really dark times. And for a topic tonight, I'm going to suggest finding a sense of humor, finding balance in our life between the seriousness of the disease and a sense of humor about ourselves. And with that, I pass. Thank you very much.